This is Ruthie at Syndicated News, and today we're having Richard S. Lowry, our military historian, is going to be talking to Ambassador Dave Smith about the United Nations discussion in Dubai related to the internet and its freedoms. Richard, are you with us already?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, and I hope that this is going to be a very interesting discussion. I know that everyone out there is interested in the use of the internet. They wouldn't be here listening to us if they weren't. And more every day, everyone becomes more involved and connected to the internet. So much so that the United Nations started a conference that lasts for a couple of weeks this week. And it's the meeting of the United Nations International Telecommunications Union. And in that meeting, they're discussing implementing controls for the internet that the United States is pretty much against. And we're going to be talking with Ambassador David Smith, who's the director of the Potomac Institute Cyber Center. Ambassador Smith joined the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies as a senior fellow in 2005. And then this year, he became the director of the Institute at the Cyber Center. Ambassador Smith has had a distinguished career in defense and foreign affairs, is an expert on international security issues, and in recent years has focused on the emerging field of cybersecurity. President George H.W. Bush nominated Ambassador Smith to lead the U.S. Soviet defense and space talks in September 21, 1989. He was confirmed by the Senate and sworn in by Senator Bob Dole. He subsequently led the U.S. team that worked to negotiate an agreement to allow deployment of defense against the growing threat of ballistic missiles until the demise of the Soviet Union in 1971. And now he's dedicated his career to cybersecurity and the internet world. And we're very much looking forward to speaking to him about this international conference that is going on in Dubai.
In any case, Richard, it's very interesting that it's happening at this time when there is so much going on internationally, politically, that they would want to control the internet.
I think that there is a concerted effort to establish some security measures on the internet around the world. The United States is certainly interested in protecting its assets in the cyber world, and different countries have different views of how they should protect themselves. Others even want to take advantage of the internet. And we'll talk a little bit more, but there's a standard that is being bantied around in this conference. It's the standard is K2770, in which the UN wants to authorize any nation to be able to monitor traffic through its servers. That means they can read any email, they can monitor any voice over IP conversation. It's authority. It's quite extensive, and the U.S. Congress, both the Senate and the House last week, had passed a bill opposing this standard.
Well, at this moment, we'd like to introduce Ambassador David Smith, and we'd like to introduce our own Ian Williams. We're so happy that he had his medical procedure, and he's here back with us and healthy.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you perfectly.
Okay.
Ambassador, are you here?
I'm here.
Excellent. I'll hand the podium over to Richard, and I'll be here in case you need anything. Gentlemen, proceed.
Hello, Ambassador. This is Richard Lowry here. I wonder
Hi, Richard.
If we could
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's truly an honor to have you on our show. I wonder if you could try to summarize to our listeners in a short summary what's going on in Dubai at the United Nations International Telecommunication Union meeting this week.
Well, what you have here is one of the operating agencies of the United Nations, the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, holding a conference to update its international telecommunications regulations. They haven't been updated in a long time. And what you have is you have the bureaucracy at the ITU, plus the delegations from Russia, from China, from Iran, and a number of other countries lining up behind them, trying to use this conference basically for a power grab over the Internet. You have some countries that like to tax it, impose some kind of fees, and then you have other countries that are really pushing for some kind of censorship, monitoring, and that sort of thing. And that's what's going on. There's a real struggle over real issues going on in Dubai right now.
So I would imagine that there are varied interests from each of the nations being represented there. Some are truly interested in computer security, and even the ones that are interested in security alone have this balance to maintain between stepping on individual freedoms versus ensuring that the Internet is secure. Can you comment on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is, of course, is a perennial problem. There's always going to be a struggle between the interests of security and the interests of privacy. But I think you have a situation here where you have the countries, both the Western countries, the democratic countries, that are trying to maintain Internet freedom, minimal government interference. It's called the multi-stakeholder approach. Basically what it means is just about everybody out there who's got any interest in the Internet has a little tiny bit of control over a little tiny bit of it, but no one's really trying to control anything. That's sort of the American position. The American Congress has passed a Sense of the Congress resolution to that effect, that we'd like that approach. The Obama administration has done a super job of building a consensus around that. There's a 150-strong delegation that has people from industry, from non-governmental organizations, as well as from the government over there, trying to work this. And that's one camp. Then you've got the camp that is, you know, roughly led by Russia, China, Iran, and others, who, when they say information security, when they say Internet security, what they mean is protection against information that could harm the state. And you hear these phrases, any kind of information that could in any way denigrate the state or a religion or a belief or put out bad information about the situation in a country. Well, you all know what that's code for. That's code for basically for censorship, for not telling people the truth. And then there's another group, and that's countries that are being pushed by some of their telecommunications companies, many of which are in government hands. They want to have some kind of fees. They feel like they're losing out on revenue from long-distance telephone calls and with voice over IP and those kinds of services, and they'd like to see if they could impose a tax or a fee. So there's kind of three camps there, and this is serious. I think this is not just the old kind of debate between privacy and security. This is a grab for the control of the Internet.
So they're trying to develop this standard, is my understanding, K-2770. What is the U.S.'s position on this? Has the Senate or the House done anything about it?
No, it's Y-2770. What this is a standard. As you can imagine, this United Nations bureaucracy is very, very complex. And there is a standards group that meets, and it met 2 or 3 weeks ago in anticipation of the Dubai conference. And there was a push for this standard. It's basically to standardize the equipment and the procedures for deep packet inspection. Well, once again, you can see where that's going. It's an attempt to try and get the United Nations to somehow give an imprimatur, some kind of sanction to this approach, that there's going to have to be some standard way that countries can do deep packet inspection. The United States opposed it, as it should, and now we'll see. The thing has no status other than it's being a UN document that goes into the Dubai conference. So now the action shifts to Dubai, and we'll see where Y-2770 goes.
Let's get the opinion of our Ian Williams. Are you there, Ian?
I am, yes.
Please give us your opinion on this.
I tend to agree. Russia, China, and the others have definitely bad motives. There's a sort of automatic hint of UN bashing here. You have to remember that these UN organizations, and I actually met the director last year, is responsible for the fact that you can pick up a telephone here and you can call Albania or Mongolia and get it answered at the other end. It's like the Universal Postal Union. You pop a letter in a mailbox here and it arrives in wherever eventually because of international agreements. But that's completely different from the type of paranoia that some of it comes from. I do take exception to anyone on Congress posing as a defender of free speech like this, since over the last few years they have handed over vast swathes of power under Homeland Security to go prying into our emails, telephones. There is no privacy at all. So, yes, it's relative. It's better here, obviously, than it is in Russia or China. But their pose as defenders of free speech and freedom of expression is somewhat tenuous. Now, the real thing here, a fascinating one, I just interviewed last year Rod Beckstrom, who was the head of ICANN. And I have to say, this is a public-private partnership that really works. ICANN is a California not-for-profit company that actually has international representation. And it is very sensitive to the needs of Internet users. And I think it's done a very good job, very efficiently, very cheaply. And this is the key to the Internet. This is the switching. This is the numbers and the telephone code, because this assigns the protocol numbers for every single device, and they have been upgrading it, and they have been sensitive to the needs of developing countries and their need to develop infrastructure. So it is a wonderful example. I believe I'm not one of his biggest fans, but it was actually set up by Clinton, and he knew that Congress wouldn't allow an international body, so he set up a not-for-private company which operates like an international body, that has representatives from all of these regions. You know, it has an advisory board that I believe has Russians and Chinese and people like that on. But they have influence and they have a say, but they don't have any power. But, you know, I think ICANN is the model here for the Internet. It's something that's a bit like Topsy just growed, and that's a suitable organization that just growed alongside it. But a lot of the talk coming out about the what's happening in Doha, it's some of it, there's reasonable grounds for caution whenever Moscow or Beijing and the other states want to start prying into your computers. But there's a lot of sort of typical UN black helicopter paranoia floating around in Congress about it as well.
Ambassador, what do you say?
Well, I'm sure the black helicopter comment wasn't directed at me, so I'll just go along with it. I think Mr. Williams is absolutely right. ICANN's the model. You know, it's not perfect, but it was set up in 1998 and really is the multi-stakeholder approach. You have all sorts of non-governmental organizations, international organizations, 111 governments there. This is exactly what you want. When Mr. Williams says they don't have any power, well, the point is no one in a multi-stakeholder system has a lot of power. You don't need power, and I think that's, you know, call it paranoia, call it what you will, but the reality is that you have the International Telecommunications Union that's supposed to be in charge of telecommunications. Mr. Williams is absolutely right. You can pick up a telephone right here in New Jersey and call someone in Albania, and that's great. But what we have now is an ITU bureaucracy that has been cooking up documents very, very much in secret, no transparency whatsoever, getting ready to dump them into this conference with very little notice, very little ability to plan or read in advance, at least for some people, some governments. The Russians and the Chinese and others trying basically to pull the Internet into the ITU's jurisdiction, which is supposed to be telecommunications. As Mr. Williams points out, there's already a system that governs this. It's ICANN. It doesn't need any more governance. And there's an old saying in America, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Richard?
Wow. I can't contribute anything to this conversation other than...
it's amazing.
We need to establish some form of international controls. And controls is really not a good word for the Internet.
regulation, try regulation.
Among countries on how the Internet is going to go forward in the future. I'm not certain if the this International Telecommunications Union is on the right track. I think that the standard that they're working on right now is basically a dusted-off standard from the basic telephone communicating world. They need to take a serious look at what the Internet is going to be like in the future before they try to come up with a worldwide solution. And I'm certainly glad that I'm not asked to be part of that, because I don't think that that's going to be a very simple problem to solve.
Ambassador? Is there a problem here, Richard? I mean, that's what I'm not sure of. What exactly is the problem that the ITU and some of these countries are trying to fix? That's what I don't understand.
Attribution. You know, some people may see attribution not as a problem at all, that anonymity is what you want on the Internet. But if it were much easier to evaluate and assign and to know where the source of some Internet packet was coming from, it would help us in the cybersecurity world immensely. But like I said, that's going to be a trade between security and personal freedoms. And an international standard to change packet contents could help that.
And we can't ignore the elephant in the room. Don't forget that Middle Eastern countries were just about taken down by Twitter in a matter of hours. Let's not forget that in the last year.
Or not forget that Anonymous attacked Israeli defense site websites just a month ago during the Gaza situation.
Exactly. All of those things go on. And what say you, Ian?
I want to let that one go by. What took down some of the regimes in the Middle East was the people of their own countries using Twitter as a tool. I don't think Twitter took down anything. Clearly, these were people who were just sick and tired of the governments that ruled them, and they used Twitter as a tool. Now, you know, Anonymous does a lot of illegal things. Anonymous does some things that aren't very good, but very, very interesting. Apparently, they hit the Dubai conference the other day. I don't think that we should be looking here to see if we can put attribution on everything. Yeah, attribution is a problem in security. But you know what? There's all sorts of other ways around this. First of all, computer forensics is a lot more effective than people think it is. You say the word attribution at a cybersecurity conference and everybody throws their hands up and says there's nothing you can do. Well, you know, computer forensics actually works better than people say it does. And then you have to put things in a context of where is this coming from, what's going on. It's not just the proof on your screen. It's the context that you're looking at. So there's a lot of things that you have to do, and there's some legal and policy techniques that get you around this. I don't think we want to hand the control of the Internet over to – I mean, look what the last thing we had in the United Nations last year was. We had a code of conduct submitted by the Russian Federation, China, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan. This is not the way to go, folks.
But then I have to go very shortly. I've got my car is coming. But one of the things, the Middle East actually summed up some of the issues. Most of those Twitters were not originating from or directed to the Middle East. It was people in other countries Twittering themselves to death in a sort of onanistic fashion about what was happening in Cairo, in Tahrir Square, and other places. And one of the things the ITU is trying to do legitimately, I think, is to broaden Internet connections inside the developing world. The problem is, of course, that's the cause that can easily be hijacked by local commercial and political interests. So that's really what we have to beware here. Everybody here has suspect motives. And in something as freewheeling as the Internet, you know, every time they fix a regulation, it's going to hit innocent users in the quotes and unquotes. It's not going to affect the anonymouses and the people who can get round and through firewalls and roundabout. So they're going to keep trying to regulate, and the regulation will jump on our toes, whereas the people, without having any great effect upon the ones that they see as malefactors. I'm sorry, I really have to go now, but it's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much for participating. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. I'm going to go back to what I said before, and that is this is not a subject that is that there's easy answers for. Many people don't. I don't understand what the Internet is going to look like in 10 years. I don't understand what it's going to look like in 5 years. So it's very, very difficult for an international agency to try to develop a standard for that. I think that especially the fact that they're using old standards that they're just trying to upgrade is a futile effort. But I commend them for trying.
I want it to be regulated, yes, like anything else, but I don't want it controlled and I don't want it taxed. Whose idea was it to tax it anyway?
Well, what you have some telecommunications companies that are basically what they're seeing, as you can imagine, is a loss of revenue. It used to be that all the long-distance traffic happened through telecommunications companies. As Mr. Williams said, you could pick up a phone and call somebody in Albania. And when you did that, your local phone company, through a very complicated formula, charged you some amount per minute for the call that you were making, and the telecommunications companies on the way and at the destination picked up a fee, and there was a very complex formula, and by the way, that's one of the things that the ITU facilitated. Now, when you've got a lot of people simply communicating by email, by text message, by voice over IP, those telecommunications companies are losing revenue. And so there's some sense that they would like to find a way to get a revenue stream off of the Internet. But, you know, the difference is they don't have a lot of infrastructure that they've put into this and that sort of thing. It's not clear that they necessarily, just because they want it, that they should have it. I mean, things are changing. And, you know, I'm not sure that dragging the Internet, I mean, I think we need to be clear here. The ITU was set up for the purpose of regulating telecommunications. And the treaty that binds all of these things, it's kind of got an awkward name, but it's the International Telecommunications Regulations. That's what's being reviewed now. There's nothing about the Internet in there at all. There's nothing that needs to be updated. As Mr. Williams pointed out, the Internet is pretty much, to the extent that it's governed by ICANN. So what we have here is an attempt to drag the Internet into those international telecommunications regulations, which, by the way, are a treaty, which means if you amend that, guess what? You've got to go through the constitutional processes in every country, including the United States Senate.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. I know that it's going to take forever, and maybe they won't even finish that in our lifetime.
And just to be the devil's advocate, isn't that same telecommunications infrastructure being used to transmit voice over IP?
To some extent, of course.
So that means that the telecommunications companies are providing that infrastructure free of charge to the Internet users.
Well, I mean, they're providing some of it, and they do still get communications fees for certain things. Yeah, for the basic voice over IP call, to the extent that they are involved, they are providing to some extent that's free. Now I'm talking to you right now on a voice over IP phone here, and I pay the company a monthly fee for that. They didn't come in and put it in for free. You know, we have these in the States. You get these nice packages. If you get your Internet service, your television, and your telephone together, you get a really good price. Well, guess what? That's voice over IP, and yes, I do pay for it.
Well, it sounds very clear. What system is that, by the way?
Well, this is Optimum in New Jersey. I'll put a plug in for them because they
actually
do a pretty good job.
Very good. Optimum for you New Jersey folk. If you're looking for a product, you can hear how clear he sounds. It's very good. So give it an opportunity.
Ambassador Smith, before we go, can you just tell us a little bit about your new book that just came out?
Yeah, we have a book that just came out. And, Rich, thanks for coming to our book launch. I hope you found it enjoyable.
I did.
It's called Hashmark Cyberduck. No Borders, No Boundaries. It's jointly published by the Battelle Memorial Institute and the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies. Our CEO at Potomac Institute, Mike Swetnam, and Vice President of Battelle, Tim Sample, are the editors of the entire book. It's really argues that the United States, this is really directed at the United States now, really needs a cybersecurity doctrine. That we're kind of doing hit and miss, not because everything we do is bad or wrong, but the way we're doing it without any real kind of roadmap. Well, we need a doctrine of where we're going, a comprehensive sense of what we're trying to do, that you're always going to stay hit and miss, you're always going to be behind the eight ball, you're always going to be playing catch-up, and that's the kind of thing that we need. Now, I've got a couple of chapters in the book about deterrence, how you might be able to deter cyber attacks on your country, and also about allies, and I argue that you not only need allies, you can have allies, and it'll work. It won't look like the old NATO, but it will work, and it's something you can build around the European Convention on Cybercrime and the concept of national responsibility.
Well, it sounds like a book that everybody that's interested in computer technology and the Internet needs to read.
Get Amazon.com.
Oh, no, stop it. Not Amazon.com. We'll have it in 2 minutes on syndicatednews.net.
Anyway, the book is available in hard copy and in an electronic version. And, yeah, I think it's a well worthwhile book. I really was privileged to sit with the kinds of people that were there writing. There's some really world-renowned experts in a lot of things writing the chapters in that book. So, yeah, I hope it's going to be something that everybody's going to read.
And all three versions will be on syndicatednews.net right on the front page.
Well, I mean, I think that, what we have, we've got another week of this this Dubai conference. And, in the end, it is diplomatic work like many other things in international organizations. I once had the privilege of serving at the UN in Geneva on other matters, but I do have that experience. And, the American delegation and the delegations from other countries, it's very, very hard work. And, this thing is going to have to be just worked and worked and worked. And they're going to have to explain a lot. You know, it's one thing to understand the procedures and see what you're doing, but to explain to some of the other delegations why you don't want Internet censorship, why this is a really bad idea, I think that's something that we're uniquely placed to do because we have 150 members on. We have a lot of people from industry, from organizations, not just the government, who can explain these things. You know, yeah, there's some things about the Internet maybe that need to be changed, but I think we've got to be very, very wary of going down this road designed by people who really want to curtail other people's freedoms. That's not the way to go. We're better off leaving this alone until we really figure out what is the problem and then figure out what is the solution. I haven't heard a clear statement of the problem yet.
And sometimes I think the problem is that governments want to control how these organizations operate. They see an activity, be it political or civil, and they're afraid that the Internet is going to allow all those young people with those Twitters and that Facebook, they're going to change policy, and I hear that all the time.
Well, that's pretty much what you've got going on, and I mean, if you take a look at Vladimir Putin's Russia, what happened here is a blogger named Alexei Navalny basically threw Putin over his shoulder in the last round of elections, first for the Duma and then for the presidency. A whole new protest movement was born on the Internet. Yes, that's exactly what countries are looking at. And, you know, just to go back to a comment made by Ian Williams, the United States government in the wake of 9/11 has probably done a few things that that maybe were a little excessive. That all can be debated, of course. But, you know, right now, I think you've got to give the United States government high marks. They're arguing for Internet freedom here. And I hope all the people who, you know, support Anonymous and other groups like that are also paying attention. The United States government is actually representing you on this. And I'm not a member of the United States government, but I think at some point you've got to give credit where credit is due.
I give them credit, but I also noticed that when Occupy Wall Street came forward strong on the live streams, the government did everything it could to control that and keep it quiet and keep it civil, and it got moved right off the front pages to the point where we just about heard nothing and saw and see nothing about it. Even though it's an active movement right now, we don't hear anything about Occupy Wall Street anywhere on mainstream
media. Well, that's something you and the press, you know, really need to do something about then, but I don't think that's the U.S. government.
No, no, no.
We're getting off into other areas here.
We're not mainstream media. We're not. So we don't have to do that. But we did notice that there was a big difference. It got very quiet.
I think the point he's trying to make, Ruthie, is that it's media's responsibility, not the government's, to keep stories like that in the limelight.
I was under the impression that local governments wanted to keep it quiet. I wasn't under the impression that media alone just wanted to obscure it, because I don't hear anything about Occupy Wall Street anymore, even though it's an active effort.
Okay, well, that's another reason why we need an internet, and we don't want governments getting their fingers onto the internet. So, you know, once again, getting back to this Dubai conference, it seems to me that for that and many, many other reasons, we really need to be careful about internet freedom. And that's what the United States, and by the way, a lot of other countries, you know, are weighing in. I mean, just the other day, there was a move to try with a sort of feel-good resolution about freedom of expression to sort of start talking about how the ITU and the International Telecommunications Regulations should cover the Internet. You know, Canada chimed in with the United States right there. I mean, both those delegations caught what was going on. So there's other countries, too, that are working this.
It's fascinating. I can't thank you enough for participating in this discussion. This has been so interesting.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And Richard, thank you for moderating and keeping us in line.
Well, I tried.
You did, and you succeeded.
Thanks for having me as well.
All right, folks. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Isn't that interesting? So,
yeah.
Richard, shall we wrap it up? Housekeeping. So we have to clean out the front page and put the banners back up, which we've done, and now we've been putting the books back up, and we will be adding that book as well. No Borders, No Boundaries.
Yeah, I believe the name of it is pound sign or hash mark, however you call
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
CyberDoc, CyberDoc.
Oh, well, one moment. We have a caller. Caller, welcome to syndicatednews.net.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, that's you. 804.
Yes, my name is Hugh. I'm calling from Virginia.
Yes, Hugh.
I just came across your show, and it's very interesting how things are happening so quickly in the, with technologies, and I'm just starting to interact with a contractor who was sued by a woman putting information on the internet, and the judge made her recant some of it, and it's still out there enough where it really damaged the company, so the contractor's suing her for about $750,000.
I've seen people have to deal with information that they choose to put on the internet, and either, as they say in most courts, either back it up or take it down. But people are responsible if they affect someone's business or an individual's reputation. They can't be held responsible.
You know, I think that brings up a point that I'd like to make.
Please.
And that is, you know, the internet is a wonderful, wonderful resource for all of us. We now have the complete knowledge base of the planet at our fingertips. But along with the use of the internet, now that we have the ability to contribute on the internet, there's a responsibility for the individual to be as factual as they can be and not use the internet in a harmful fashion. Now, I'm not going to try to be a judge and jury on this case. I live in Virginia as well, and I know of this case as well about the woman and the contractor on Yelp.
Yeah.
I'm not going to judge one way or the other on who's right or who's wrong. It's just that what jumped out to me when I saw that story is, if this woman is telling the truth, everyone should know. But if she isn't telling the truth, she ought to pay every penny of that $750,000.
That was my point, because I have heard from an investigative source that the judge made her take some of the information off the internet. So some of it is still there, and because of the damages that have occurred from, the things the judge made her take off, that's where the lawsuit is pursuing on the part of the company. And that's, again, what you said is so important, and that's what has to really get out to everyone, is don't say things unless you can back it up with a preponderance of the evidence.
You're absolutely right.
Yes, and I'm not going in favor of companies, because a lot of them have done a lot of things that aren't correct.
Okay, he's going to be listening. Richard, do you want to give us the close?
Thank you for listening to SyndicatedNews.net. Come back often. We have lots of good things to talk about.
Thank you, Richard, and that's a wrap.